Hello again, everyone, and wherever you may be, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be with you, Dennis.
Good to be with you on this Monday night, July 3rd, the night before the 4th of July, as we go live. Well, Laura, the U.S. Supreme Court made big news in Iowa and all across the nation last Friday with two major decisions that are going to affect millions of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iowans. We are going to cover that in depth. But first, what could happen next week at the state capitol? Both KCCI-TV in Des Moines and the Associated Press have reported that Iowa lawmakers could return to the state house for a special legislative session next Monday. All guesses are if they come back, abortion could be on the agenda. What are you hearing?
Well, I was able to independently confirm what they reported, which is that at least some Iowa lawmakers received an email telling them to hold July 10th open for a possible special session. I would characterize that as more of a trial balloon than anything else. It does not mean that it's definitely going to happen. Certainly, if they do hold a special session, abortion is the main thing on the agenda, if not the only thing. But Governor Reynolds has not yet called a special session, and it's not clear to me that they have hashed out all the details on an abortion bill. They're not going to convene in Des Moines until they have that bill drafted and ready to go and pass in one day.
And this is not going to be easy, is it? Because there are so many things that come into play. We know that the state Supreme Court, a couple of weeks ago, deadlocked on whether to reinstate the six-week ban on abortion after 6 weeks. So where do they go from here? What's your guess on what they're talking about right now?
Well, I think that they will land at some kind of a bill that is very close to a six-week ban. I certainly think Governor Reynolds is not going to sign anything less restrictive than a six-week ban. I know that there are people in the Republican caucus who would prefer to have a complete abortion ban, similar to what some states have passed with no exceptions for instance, rape or incest. However, there are a lot of people who do want to have exceptions. I want to remind people, because we weren't doing the show in 2018, but I did follow this very closely. The bill that was passed in 2018 at the end of the legislative session was very hastily drafted. And at the time, nobody thought it was going to go into effect because it was very obviously in violation of the Roe v. Wade precedent. And that was the deliberate strategy, was that this would be something that could be litigated through the courts and possibly become a vehicle to overturn Roe v. Wade. So I would say that there wasn't a lot of attention to detail in how the exceptions were crafted. And now, as we've seen in reports from other states, I just saw another report from Texas the other day about somebody who had a very severe complication that led to an infection, but she wasn't able to get an abortion because the fetus's heart had not stopped beating. So there may be people in the Republican caucus who want to fine-tune the way the exceptions are written to make sure that we don't have those kinds of situations in Iowa. However, I think that whatever they pass is going to closely resemble that 2018 law.
And we should point out again, as we have many times over this broadcast, abortion is now legal, still legal in Iowa, up to 20 weeks of pregnancy.
That's right. There's a 24-hour waiting period and an ultrasound requirement. But, and by the way, if the legislature does pass some bill, whether it's next week or a few weeks from now or a few months from now, that would not immediately go into effect. It's very likely that a lawsuit would be filed quickly. Also very likely that a judge would put the law on hold while the litigation is pending, just as what happened with the 2018 law. So it's very likely that for the foreseeable future, at least for the next year or so, abortion will remain legal up to about 20 weeks in Iowa.
Now let's talk about those two big U.S. Supreme Court decisions last week. One on Thursday, one on Friday, gigantic decisions. The one on Thursday affecting affirmative action at U.S. colleges and universities. Let's download that one.
Okay, so there were two separate lawsuits that were decided fairly jointly. One was against Harvard, a private university. One was against the public University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So they were very similar. The argument was that affirmative action policies were a violation of the 14th Amendment's equal protection guarantee. And they were both, well, one was a 6-3 decision. The other was a 6-2 decision because Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson recused herself from the Harvard litigation because she used to serve on the Harvard Board of Trustees. But in any case, the very similar decisions, 14th Amendment analysis that said that universities cannot have blanket policies that favor people from certain racial and ethnic groups. However, the majority opinion by Justice John Roberts did say that universities can still take race into account as part of an individual's application, for instance, how race or racial discrimination had affected an individual applicant.
And in dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote that the court was rolling back what she called decades of precedent and momentous progress.
Well, it certainly was rolling back precedent. I mean, there had been previous rulings on affirmative action that this contradicted. I don't think that the Chief Justice Roberts explicitly overturned those precedents, but really he rewrote those precedents so that the type of affirmative action that was allowable under those precedents for decades is no longer going to be allowable.
As you said, there are other ways for universities to take this into account. Both Iowa State University and the State Board of Regents did not comment on the ruling. University of Iowa issued a statement saying it's going to continue to focus on creating a good campus culture. That's pretty much the response that those universities that did comment said. That's pretty much what they all said.
Well, I think it's important to remember that most colleges and universities in the United States are not highly selective. And so affirmative action probably doesn't play a major role in college admissions at many colleges and universities. One thing after the holiday, I plan to reach out to Grinnell College because I do think that that is probably the most selective private institution in Iowa. I would like to know what kind of affirmative action policy they have or what kind of changes they might make to that. But one thing that people are concerned about, the people who are criticizing this ruling, is that this only applies to college admissions, but it could be that citing this precedent, there could be more lawsuits filed. In fact, I think there already are lawsuits working their way through the federal courts challenging the use of affirmative action in hiring and in other contexts, employment contexts, not just college admissions.
That decision on Thursday was pretty much expected, as was the one that followed last Friday on the student loan forgiveness plan. The Supreme Court, on a 6-3 vote, struck down President Biden's plan to wipe out student debt for 26 million Americans and potentially 264,000 people in Iowa.
So this was similar in that there were two separate lawsuits. One of them was brought by two individuals, and they were found not to have standing. But the other one was brought by a group of states, including Missouri and Iowa. And interestingly, the analysis, they didn't address whether Iowa and several of the other states had standing. The majority decided that the state of Missouri had standing because of this a separate organization that's separately structured that services student loans. And that was deemed sufficient to give the state of Missouri standing. By the way, this was very controversial in legal circles. And there were a lot of people when this lawsuit was filed who predicted that this would not be successful because the states would be found not to have standing. Of course, they turned out to be incorrect. So this is going to affect well over a quarter of a million Iowans who would have qualified for the student loan relief. However, we don't know all of the details because the Biden administration is still promising to try to use other levers of power to try to give some kind of debt relief to those people.
As you would imagine, Democrats decried the decision. They did not like it. Republicans, especially around Iowa, well, all over the country, said it was a great decision. In fact, Brenna Byrd, the attorney general, said she had sued to protect Iowans' hard-earned money. That was basically the response from Republicans.
Yes. And I mean, they've been very critical from the beginning that when the Biden administration announced this policy, the Republicans across the country were very critical of it and said it was very unfair. I think it's important to mention that the federal government, it's not a new thing for the federal government to give people debt relief. I mean, farmers have received loan forgiveness. Other groups of people have received, small business owners have received loan forgiveness under certain circumstances. So this is not a completely new thing, but certainly the rhetoric coming from the governor and various Republican politicians, and as you mentioned, Attorney General Byrd, is that this is unfair to people who either didn't go to college or paid off their loans already. This would be unfair to give some people student loan debt relief.
And the two Republican U.S. senators from Iowa had some good words about this, good words in terms of bringing things into the argument. Joni Ernst said the student loan program is socialism. Chuck Grassley said it's not only fiscally insane, it's unconstitutional. Well, that's pretty clear on where they stand.
Yes, actually, though, the Supreme Court's decision didn't exactly say it was unconstitutional. They said that it was it was not lawful under the law, that the law from the early 2000s that the Biden administration used to try to make this thing happen more quickly. So that's a little bit different from the affirmative action ruling, which they did rule that these affirmative action policies had been unconstitutional. But the student loan debt relief was, if I understood the decision correctly, it was more that the Biden administration exceeded its authority under this HEROES Act, which is the one that they use. But there is another, an older higher education act that I believe the Biden administration is going to try to invoke now. That's a longer process, and we'll see if it's successful.
Now, bear in mind, I was not saying that. I was quoting Chuck Grassley saying.
Oh, yes. No, I know that's, you are correctly quoting Chuck Grassley. I was just saying that when Chuck Grassley said that that it's unconstitutional, I'm not sure that accurately reflects what the decision found.
Now, let's veer into a side issue here. Not a side issue, but we're going to have something that you reported exclusively on Bleeding Heartland. You did a lot of work on this one. I'm going to try to summarize in one line. You summarize in more than one line. You reported that the state of Iowa's chronic lateness, we've talked about this, in producing financial reports, threatened to disrupt the flow of federal money to state universities this year. All right. You broke this story. What's it all about?
I've been chasing this story in one form or another for about 2.5 years, almost since we've been doing this show, Dennis. So there is something called an annual comprehensive financial report that all government entities have to produce, state and local governments. It's usually produced within 6 months of the end of the fiscal year. Iowa's fiscal year ends in June. June 30th. So for decades, the state of Iowa routinely published this report by the end of December. However, in 2021, for the first time, it was very late, months late, more than 8 months late. Now, I think, in fact, in 2021, it was 9 months late. Then last year, it was more than 7 months late. And this year, it's on track to be at least 7 or 8 months late again. And when I've reported on this in the past, I was concerned initially about whether this could affect the state of Iowa's credit rating, for instance, but I could never find any concrete impact of this late reporting. However, more recently, a few weeks ago, and that was the focus of my report last week, I learned that the U.S. Department of Education was very concerned about the lack of these financial reports being released in a timely manner, and that the state auditor's office here was working with the state universities to try to get individual reports filed for the state universities so that they wouldn't lose out on any or have any federal funding delayed or withheld because of the lack of financial reporting. So state auditor Rob Sand and his staff had to do a lot of work with the state universities. And this is something 44 of the 50 states had no trouble getting their comprehensive report done on time. So Iowa is in a pretty small group here that is not managing to cope with this task.
So you said it threatened to disrupt the flow of federal money. Has federal money been disrupted? Has it been kept out?
No, not yet, because the comprehensive report is still unpublished, but the state auditor's office worked with the U.S. Department of Education and with the three state universities to release individual audits of the state universities by the end of June. Those came out. In future years, they're planning to release individual audits for the state universities by the federal deadline, which is March 31st. I should mention that during the pandemic, the federal government gave states more leeway to have their reporting done late, but that was not going to be in effect this year. So that's why last year's late reporting and 2021's late reporting didn't have the same impact on universities, because during the pandemic, I think there were more states that were just having trouble. They were diverting a lot of resources to a lot of other tasks, as you can imagine.
And you have been working on this for a long time. We've been talking about it almost since the start of this broadcast. And congratulations on breaking it last week.
Thank you.
All right. One more quick story before we take a short station ID break here. Iowans, again, another court case, this one in Iowa, not in the U.S. Supreme Court. Iowans, as a result of this decision, can again start receiving non-English language voting materials. This is a big deal.
This is really interesting. This has been brewing for a couple of years now. The English only, we have to go way back to Governor Tom Vilsack, when the Republican-controlled legislature passed a law that said that the materials have to be printed only in English. He vetoed the first version. They sent him another version, which he signed, to the surprise of a lot of people. And then in the 2000s, there was a lawsuit that led to the county auditors being told they couldn't print any voting materials, voter registration transmission materials or other things in other languages, primarily Spanish was the one being litigated. So this injunction has been in effect since the 2000s, preventing the county auditors from doing that. 2 years ago, the League of United Latin American Citizens in Iowa filed suit. They went back to Polk County District Court and they said, hey, look, this law, this English-only law says it has an exception there that says that materials, if it's necessary to exercise a state or federal constitutional right, then you can print it in materials other than English, in languages other than English. And hey, voting is a fundamental right. And they were successful. I don't know why the state didn't raise that issue. For some reason, the state's lawyers didn't raise that argument when this was litigated in the 2000s. But the Polk County District Court judge agreed. He found in favor last week, found in favor of LULAC, and said this injunction is hereby dissolved. And it, we'll see whether this, whether the state appeals. I think the state, the Secretary of State may appeal this ruling, and then it would go up to the Iowa Supreme Court. But for now, the county auditors in counties that have a large ethnic minority population, they can now print voter registration and other materials in languages other than English.
All right, it is 16 minutes exactly after the hour, and this is KHOI's Capital Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. We are here every week at this time, every single week, to talk about what's happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. Well, Laura, as we go live on this Monday night, July 3rd, it's 4th of July week, and we've got some GOP presidential candidates coming in. This is what we call our Capitol Week Caucus Almanac. As we speak right now live at this hour, Doug Burgum, the governor of North Dakota, and Asa Hutchinson, the former governor of Arkansas, are marching in the Independence Day Parade, which for some reason is tonight, July 3rd, in West Des Moines. It starts at 6:30. I'm not sure that marching in the parade or any parade for these two particular candidates is going to make a big difference for their candidacy, but they're here.
Well, I'm here to tell you, I know a lot of candidates, former candidates, political volunteers who have marched in that parade. That's a long parade route. That's about a 3-mile route. It's a pretty hot day, even though it's getting late in the day. It's still quite hot. And that parade tends to move pretty quickly. So, I mean, it's a good way to get your face in front of a lot of people, but I think they're going to be pretty hot and tired by the end of it. I know that some candidates in past years before the year before an Iowa caucus, it's not that uncommon for candidates to try to walk in some of these 4th of July parades. It's a good way to get some earned media, to get on local TV, and to meet, to shake hands with some of the politically active people.
Well, tomorrow, the 4th of July, as we go again live on Monday night, Mike Pence, the former vice president, he's marching in a parade, this one in Urbandale.
Yes, the Urbandale parade, that's usually in the morning, so he should avoid the worst of the heat, although it's going to be in the 90s tomorrow. So probably even by the morning, it's going to be hot. And that also can be a pretty long route. I think that's close to 3 miles, if not quite 3 miles. So, but the Des Moines suburbs, that one goes through Urbandale, quite a populous suburb, and there are a lot of Republican caucus goers there.
And we should say that he came from Ukraine in order to march in this Urbandale parade. He went to Ukraine last week.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Larry Elder, he's a former talk show host. He's marching tomorrow, 4th of July parade in Clear Lake at 10 o'clock in the morning.
And that's one of the largest 4th of July parades in the state. So you know there are going to be a lot of news media there, and he'll probably get a decent amount of TV or radio exposure from being in that parade.
Now, Casey DeSantis is not coming to march in a parade. She is the wife of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, but she's going to be in Johnston on Thursday, July 6th, to launch the Mamas for Dissent, this grassroots organization, Mamas for Dissent. So you take it from there.
Yes. So there, this is a joint event with Governor Kim Reynolds. Remember, the governor has appeared with a number of different Republican presidential candidates, and she has said she's not likely to endorse any of the candidates before the Iowa caucuses. But certainly, I think that it shows that she's very favorably disposed toward Ron DeSantis. She's praised him. They've praised each other a lot. And Mamas for DeSantis, they're going to have an event in Johnston. That's another suburb to the northwest of Des Moines. That's an area where the Moms for Liberty and other organizations were very active this year. And so the agenda of Mamas for DeSantis, it's very similar to some of what we talked about during the legislative session, the so-called parental rights in education, getting certain materials and curriculum out of schools. I know that that is going to be, and I think generally speaking, policies toward LGBTQ people, that's part of the agenda. But I haven't seen the specifics about what Casey DeSantis is going to announce.
Now, where are the Mamas for Ryan Binkley? this Waze also running for president?
That's a good question.
All right. Well, the big honcho, the big kahuna is coming to town, to Iowa. I'm talking about former President Donald Trump, who's leading in every national poll. He's going to be at Council Bluffs this Friday, July 7th.
Yes. And President Trump hasn't done a lot of events since announcing. He really has had fewer in-person events in the early states than the other candidates. But of course, he's the front runner and he already has universal name ID. So he doesn't need to do as much retail campaigning as the others. Council Bluffs is part of the Omaha media market. And so it tends to be ignored, I think, a little bit by some other candidates. And so he's going to probably dominate the airwaves there in that corner of Southwest Iowa. And I think it was an area that he was fairly strong, even though, as you may remember, he didn't win the 2016 caucuses. He came in second to Ted Cruz, but I think he did fairly well in the Council Bluffs area.
Yeah, and he is not marching in a parade. He's going to make a speech at the Mid-America Center at 1 o'clock.
That's right.
All right. We have some other news, non-caucus news. We'll talk about these parade marchers next Monday on Capitol Week, as well as some other things going on. This is very interesting. I find this interesting. Federal government last week denied Governor Reynolds' first request for federal money after that six-story apartment building in Davenport partially collapsed a month ago. It was terrible. Three people died. Lots of people were injured and displaced. I have a question, an interesting question here. A federal agency said the severity of the situation did not warrant an emergency declaration. Do you think, is it possible this is some sort of political payback for the governor being so critical of Biden?
Well, I don't know. I feel like that was implied on the governor's, this appeared on the governor's official Twitter feed. And the comment was the White House has denied, and then posting this letter from the FEMA, from the Emergency Management Agency. So there's really no evidence that the White House had any input. And I think that FEMA has fairly standard criteria for when a federal declaration when there is a federal declaration. I mean, it is going to cost millions of dollars, this cleanup, but most of the debris, I think, has already been cleared. And so I didn't see any evidence that the White House did interfere, but I felt that that was definitely what Governor Reynolds was trying to imply with the way the letter was published.
And she said she had made a second request for money that she said was still pending. We will keep an eye on this and see what goes on. Meanwhile, Iowa is going to apply reversing course for federal money to help feed some kids this summer.
Yes, and this was something that the Iowa Hunger Coalition and many Democratic state legislators, faith groups have been working on for several weeks. This was a pandemic program that was basically for people who qualified for a certain kind of food assistance, people who qualified for free and reduced price school breakfast and lunch, and providing meals for them over the summer. And Iowa did participate in the program last summer, but initially, according to an email that was released a few weeks ago to the media, was supposedly not going to participate in the program this year because of bureaucracy or what was perceived as bureaucratic hurdles. But there was a big uproar because $28 million. I mean, it was more than $150 per family. Many, many thousands of families are food insecure, and food banks have already been reporting very high demand. So this was something that the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services announced last week that they will apply. I don't think the application has been submitted yet, but it's not due until July 14th.
Well, here's one that could be a game changer for a lot of rural communities across the country, including Iowa. We all know what's going on in rural communities. They're hollowing out in many areas, in many places, as young people leave, et cetera. Well, Iowa is in line, it was reported last week, and we are tonight, for about $415 million to expand access to high-speed internet. That is nothing but a good idea from almost everybody's point of view.
Yes, and most of this stems from the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed that had billions and billions of dollars for broadband, particularly rural broadband. But I think some of it will go. There are underserved urban neighborhoods that don't have reliable broadband collections, but most of this is going to be for rural. You may recall that Democratic Representative Cindy Axne and Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican, voted for that infrastructure bill. The rest of Iowa's congressional delegation voted against it. So this is money that has been in the works for a while and was just officially announced last week. But I think people have known it's been coming. And I think some tranches of the federal money already had arrived previously.
And Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley gave a thumbs up to the plan, saying internet access is just as important, as he put it, as electricity or water or other basic services. It certainly would allow kids who have graduated from college, who had to move away perhaps to take other jobs, if they could work from home and if they had internet access, maybe this can be a game changer.
Well, it is very important. I saw somebody was asking me, why do we need this? Because a smaller and smaller portion of the Iowa population lives in rural areas. But it is important not just for workforce, for businesses. I mean, to have an online presence as a business, you really need to have a high-speed internet connection. Also, healthcare. I mean, telehealth is very important in rural Iowa. They have a shortage of healthcare providers in many areas. So that's going to be important for people to have access and education. And even though Iowa has changed the law so that schools can't offer primarily online instruction, it still could be very important in an emergency situation or if there's a snow day that schools could still have some online instruction. So it is important for people to have access. And Iowa really does have a lot of broadband desert still.
Yep. All right. We always try to report on Iowa Freedom of Information Act incidents because it's important for you to know, the public, what's going on. Well, the Bettendorf School Board has agreed to settle a lawsuit filed by the Freedom of Information Council over a board forum where somehow last year journalists were denied entry.
This was a really incredible thing. Immediately when it happened, you just knew it was going to be a lawsuit. And of course, it was. A number of Quad City area media organizations joined with the Iowa Freedom of Information Council to file a lawsuit. And you may recall last week, we talked about the settlement in the open records lawsuit against the governor's office, where I was a plaintiff. Usually when lawsuits are settled, it's very common that neither side admits wrongdoing. So in our settlement, for instance, the state did not admit that the governor's office violated the open records law. But this Bettendorf case was so blatant. Members of the public were kept out of this meeting. Members of the media were kept out. People who were allowed in the room were not allowed to record the meeting to share with people later. That part of the settlement agreement, in addition to paying the attorney's fees for the news organizations that sued, they did admit, actually, the school board that, yes, they violated the open meetings law, and they're very sorry, and they're not going to do it again.
Yeah, as you say, as soon as this happened, I think everybody who's been in the media for even more than 10 minutes knew that this was going to be a problem for Bettendorf.
Right. And they tried to say that it wasn't an official public meeting because they weren't discussing public policy. They were just listening. But almost all of the school board members but one were present at the meeting. And it's very clear in the open meetings law that doesn't only apply to situations where school board or city council members are taking a vote, but also whenever there's any kind of official proceeding. And if they were listening to members of the public for, I think it was almost a 2-hour meeting, that certainly would qualify as there was well over a quorum of the school board members were present.
All right. In our last 90 seconds, we want to talk about, in some sorrow, what's happened to 4 Iowa newspapers. We love newspapers because they actually provide information to local communities as well as we do. But 4 Iowa newspapers owned by Lee Enterprises started producing print editions only 3 days a week. And that, I think, is really sad.
Yeah, it is. This is amazing. So the Sioux City Journal, Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, Mason City Globe Gazette, and the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil, those had been, none of them were publishing 7 days a week. They were publishing either 5 or 6 days a week up to now. But just as of June 20th, they switched to a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule. So no Sunday paper. That's going to be a big change for people. And in the case of Sioux City, Waterloo, and Mason City, they're going to be delivered by mail rather than by traditional delivery first thing in the morning. So I don't know about you, but we get our mail very late in the day. So people are going to be getting their newspapers quite late. However, they did beef up the editions that people will be receiving 3 days a week are going to be larger than the previous daily, and they will still publish online 7 days a week.
And this points out the need for internet access in rural communities because these folks will no longer be getting perhaps a print paper. They need to have internet.
Yes, absolutely. Especially if some kind of emergency situation or breaking news develops, as what happened with that Davenport City building collapse that happened over a weekend, over a holiday weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and lots of people were relying on the Quad City Times online.
15 seconds. How are you and your family going to spend the 4th of July?
Oh, we're going to Windsor Heights. Usually they don't have a parade this year, but we're probably going to try to find some fireworks display tomorrow.
I think you should invite Ryan Binkley.
I think it's probably too late. His handlers, I'm sure he's fully booked for tomorrow.
We fully respect Ryan Binkley, who's running for president and who has, unfortunately for him, very little chance. No lane there. All right, Laura, I'm going to see you next week.
See you next week, Dennis.
We are out of time for this edition of Capital Week, probably just in time. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will indeed be back next week in the same time slot, when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. As always, we hope you can join us. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it, and we truly value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy 4th of July week.